I'm just glad I don't have a sister. Wait, I do have a sister, and so does almost everyone on the show. Today we are talking Supergirl Season 4, Episode 11, Blood Memory. There's so much sister drama, I have to tell you all about it. Stay tuned for the after show right here on AfterBuzz. Starts right now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Supergirl. And that's where we're talking about all today. Supergirl Season 4, Episode 11, Blood Memory. So much actually happened in this episode, and it was so fun. I am here alone today as we talk Lena and James, RV drug dealers, Neonal's trip home, Dreamer finally comes to life as much as possible. We're going to get a much more of her in the next episode. Nia and her sister, Alex's mind swipe, Alex and Kara, sisters again, and of course, Alex and Supergirl, the sister she doesn't even know she has. The big reveal, and when I say the big reveal, I don't just mean one. And our special segment, scene reflection, where we pick a scene that best reflects our inner psyche. We have some news and gossip that you're going to not want to miss, and our predictions for next week. I am your host. My name is Taran. You're familiar with me because I host each and every week right here at AfterBuzz TV. And to my left, I have no one because I'm the only one here tonight as we're talking all things Supergirl Episode 11, Blood Memory. A perfect name to an almost perfect episode. I was actually thoroughly entertained as we're going into this mid-season revival of Supergirl. There's so much action in each episode. It's stuff you don't want to miss. It's so good that Red Daughter actually had a purpose. Now, the purpose was kind of pointless, but the purpose existed nonetheless, and we're going to get into all of that. Let's start off with Lena and James. And the reason I start off with Lena and James is because even though it was a plot, it wasn't the biggest plot, so I want to get that out of the way. And Lena and James is something I kind of feel like I want to get out of the way too. I guess I don't mind them being together, but it's almost as if their plot storyline is always forced into, like, hey, remember, Lena and James are here. Hey, guys, Lena and James are going to play a part. And of course, that's probably because Lex Luthor is going to play such a big part going on, as we introduced last week, Lex Luthor to be played by John Cryer, who we all know affectionately as Ducky. Well, at least I do, from Pretty in Pink. But if you don't, you know John Cryer has played numerous characters throughout television and movie history, a very acclaimed actor and someone we're all accustomed to. So we're looking forward to John Cryer. We got some first peeks. But with Lena and James, it's not something that I'm specifically accustomed to, is this kind of relationship. And when I say this kind of relationship, I specifically mean their dynamic. Either they're good together or they're not. We still don't know. They keep playing this good guy, bad guy, good cop, bad cop, we're on the same side, ride or die, or I'm the one that's going to kill you thing. It's a storyline that's been playing out and almost plaguing the better half of last season going into this season. And I for one, am getting pretty tired of it. I like Lena and James enough. I liked Lena more with other, I mean, I like James with other people a little more. I like Lena just being the quasi-villain, the villain with good intentions. I'm waiting for that storyline to play out. But as far as Lena and James is going on, let's be frank. It's just kind of dragging out. When we get into Lena and James, we start them off at the game night where they're playing Exploding Kittens and having a hard time just getting on the same page. They don't know enough about each other, or they're not as compatible as they think they are. And they're trying. It's almost the way that the writers are forcing the storyline onto us. They're forcing the relationship onto each other. They aren't as compatible. They don't know each other's answers the way they think the other teammates, team members at the game night might. And to the point where Lena sets up a game night training at her home, and this is the key element, is when James walks in, he says, I'm all in. I'm all in. Is it a double entendre for I'm all in for the game night training, or I'm all in for whatever ride you're taking me along for, Lena? Because Lena is you know, the head of L Corp. And in the beginning of the episode, we see a new reporter, Mackenzie, comes into James's office as the editor and basically pitches a new story, a story about L Corp to James. L Corp story about genetic testing and black budgets and off the book monies and things of that nature. And James is reluctant, but tells Mackenzie to go for it. But by the end of the episode, James is the one that shuts down the story, and he lies. He flat out lies and says, you know, I checked out your story, and basically it didn't come up. It didn't go. It wasn't all correct. Everything seems to be approved and nothing wrong over there at L Corp. And Mackenzie's shocked, like, oh, my source is usually really good about these things. James is like, well, I'm glad you brought it to me first. Yeah, because James, you shut it down. You shut it down for your girlfriend. You are now a part of this conspiracy. And honestly, you're an accessory after the fact, to be very honest. I mean, clearly there's something going on over at L Corp. We know about this testing that Lena's doing with this this product to make the average human into a superhero so that they won't be as afraid, quote unquote, of the aliens who do have superpowers. I mean, we're looking at some playing God type stuff here. And while we often find ourselves with science and the controversy of is science playing God, this time, this is above and beyond. This is stuff that's extremely dangerous, especially in the wrong hands. We have that question of, sure, this is just a gun, but in the wrong hands, it's someone who's a murderer or someone who defends themselves, right? Well, this isn't just a loaded gun. This is a loaded pill that gives people superheroes. We need to be very careful and tread lightly where this slippery slope goes. She is playing with powers beyond her control, and James knows this, but covers it up simply because Lena's his girlfriend. That's more than ride or die. That's more like ride and die in jail, James. So be very, very careful. I want to talk about before I get to the next topic. I do want to talk about everyone at home, especially on these days where I'm here by myself. You guys are the best thing that happens. And when I say that, I mean, I enjoy you as part of the panel, you being all of you at home. And I just wanted to tell you and thank you for making us the ESPN of TV talk here at AfterBuzz. And for us to continue to grow, we could really use your help. You could be the superheroes of this situation. If you're on YouTube right now, hit that thumbs up button and subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating. But no matter where you are, leave us a comment so you can get involved in the conversation. Being a part of AfterBuzz TV has meant so much to all of us, and we truly appreciate you supporting us and doing what we love. Don't forget to tell your friends, to tell their friends, to tell their family, and tell their friends, and keep enjoying our shows. We have a variety of after shows for a variety of television programming. So please tune in, share, and subscribe. We appreciate you. I try to do the Jorge because Heather and Jorge and Zach, who are usually on the panel, Jorge has the voice. He's the voice. I try to give it that kind of feel, but I hope you guys got the message. We appreciate each and every one of you. Please leave your comments below. And I have Josh in the booth going over the live chat. So if you have anything that you want to say or questions or comments or pieces of information, I appreciate each and every article of everything that you do and provide. Please feel free, and Josh will interject and let me know what's going on over there.
For sure. Hey, Tehran.
Hey, Josh. Hey.
What's going on? So we got some people in the chat right now. First off, let's start off with a shout out to you. Tehran is always on. That's from Incan TV.
Hey.
And now we have an interesting question here. Maybe a little later on in the show, but they were asking about how Red Daughter got hurt or how Red Daughter got injured in the first place. Maybe that's a little something going on.
Well, let's get right into that part of the storyline, because that storyline, we're going to use that as part of the RV drug dealers. Now, we finally get a use for Red Daughter, which is great. But the use was, okay, I understand. We're watching a comic book TV show, and there is a suspension of disbelief that happens whenever you watch a show of this nature. However, for the most part, I feel that a lot of DC shows do a lot for realism. We get a lot of realism in the concept. Sure, some are far-fetched, but we still believe it. In the case of Red Daughter and her doing her average missile catch-the-missile drill that she does in Cosnia and throws it at the drone and then flies down. So she sees her nose is bleeding, so of course there's something wrong, and we don't know exactly what happened to her. It looked like it might have been a lack of sun. I mean, they are in Cosnia. It's not known as the land of sun, right? But Red Daughter is supposed to be invulnerable. Her nose isn't supposed to bleed. We right away know something's wrong. She collapses, and then they gurney her into this room, not a hospital, but this medical laboratory type room that's reserved for an army base. And she's shocked by a defibrillator. Boom. And the shockwave of her being shocked by the defibrillator goes into the atmosphere and is sent around the globe. And one of the shockwaves finds its way all the way to this RV where we get these drug dealers who we later find out are named Jerry, Kev, and Bobby. It zaps their pills. And that's where we get the pill monsters, these rage monsters, or as Brainy likes to call it, these sweet, sweet rage pills that turn these people into rage monsters with super strength. It's some form of ecstasy of some type, and people are buying these drugs, and these two frat boys are the ones who buy the drugs from originally. They take it, and all of a sudden become monsters. So Jerry, Kev, and reluctantly Bobby, who's just along for the ride, the little sister, who we find out is the little sister, because initially it seemed that Jerry and Bobby had a love connection. There was more love, and this might be a form of bias since they weren't of the same type of genetic heritage, at least not visually. And I'm glad that I'm a person of color so I can make these kind of statements, because you know how sensitive people are now in the world when we're talking about things of that nature and race. And with the CW, they do such a great job of inclusivity. It's wonderful, but at some times it's unnecessary. And this is one of those times where you're looking at the brother and the sister and their interaction, and not only does it seem slightly romantic because of the protective nature of the brother didn't come off very brotherly, but you also look at them and say, I didn't think they were brother and sister until you told me they were brother and sister. That's how it plays later, simply because of who they are and their last names, and we find that out as a piece of information as the DEO investigates. But originally, we had no idea. It seemed as if this is the girlfriend. They're all kind of runaways of some sort, and they're drug dealing to support their themselves and pay for their millennial habits, right? So just say no to drugs, people, especially rage drugs. People should probably say no to these rage drugs. That's a no-no. So we get these rage monsters, and it becomes a driving force of this plot, even though it's an implausible way that these pills are zapped by Red Daughter all the way from Cosnia. Some power in the air zaps these particular pills. They start to glow, and people still take them anyway. Okay, we're going to try our best to believe that this happened. That was unbelievable. But the rest of the storyline, thankfully, stays to a very believable plot line that we can all manage to deal with. And that's with the whole super strength, these monsters. Sure, we're going with that. The drug dealers they escape because they drive away, but the two users, the frat boys that ingest the original pills, these zap pills, they go to a party, and something that I like, and this is part of that realism, people are videotaping them with their phone, and so those videos go viral. I mean, they get 16,000 views in the first hour or two. That's the kind of stuff, when I say realism, that we're used to in these comic book shows. It is adapting to our everyday life and showing that this is a plausible version of what happens on this earth in that way. We start believing this, and now we're back into the believable territory again, thankfully. So the two frat boys, when they're captured by the DEO, I love when Brainy says, they're not just human, they're frat boys. That's the concept. They're not just human, they're frat boys. Because you're looking at them like they seem to be aliens, but they're not. They are human beings, and more importantly, more alien than any alien, they are frat boys. And how do they learn how to be frat boys? Like anyone does, like Brainy did, from movies. Loved the scene. I loved the scene when Brainy goes in and Brainy talks about he gets them to confess by acting like a frat boy. And he talks about the sweet, sweet rage candy. And he's like, man, I can't wait to score some more. And of course, the frat boys in frat talk give up the names of the drug dealers. And that's how we are able to ascertain who they are and get the DEO involved in the investigation. The DEO is realizing that this is some type of supernatural, out of the world, alien cause, and it's a need for investigation. And I was impressed with Brainy. Brainy wouldn't have come off as the best candidate to act. You know how Brainy is on the spectrum when it comes to personality, and Brainy is sometimes too smart to understand average human nature, but he plays it very well. Of course, getting the knowledge from movies. As we saw two or three episodes ago, he's been consuming all the human movies. So now he's this cornucopia wealth of knowledge on human behavior because, of course, all of us are predisposed and programmed to acting the way we see in movies. That's actually a very strong social commentary take, and it's something that Supergirl and a lot of shows do so well, is use these subtle anthropological nuances and explain who we are back to us in a very fun and lighthearted way. So now we have this situation where the dealers they're basically close to Parthas. We see this whole, the Children of Liberty are in Parthas, location that we are going to talk about once we get to Nia Nall's trip home, because this is her home, and their harvest festival, which they have every year as their location. This Parthas is a place where aliens and humans live in relative peace. They're a very inclusive neighborhood, a very inclusive community, and that's what's beautiful. Children of Liberty go up there every year just to disrupt this festival, and that's crap. It's like the world, you know, we know the world would be a better place if we all recycled, and we know the world would be a better place if we all stopped being violent. We know the world would be a better place if we helped one another. But honestly, in a lot of ways, the world would be a better place if we just all minded our dang business. Like, everyone just, you don't like something, so you're going to go out of your way to a place that has nothing to do with you and try to ruin it for people there. That's just the most vile part of human nature. I hate something, so I need everyone around me to hate it too. Once again, that social commentary that CW is so good at just reflecting on us in such a good, intertwined with the story way. I hate something, so I need you to hate it too. I need to justify my hate. I need, hate is contagious. I need everyone to hate. Oh my gosh, like, you're not even from this town, Children of Liberty. You're not even there. They don't want you there. They don't want you there. So why are you going there to disrupt or show disruption or cause any type of conflict whatsoever? The dealers, the whole Jerry and Kev, and of course Bobby, who's going along for the ride, go up there to deal. They think they got a really good offer for $10,000 a pill, which is great. Anyone who deals drugs knows whenever an offer is too good, that's the conspiracy. Something, I thought they were getting set up by the DEO. When they first got up there, I thought the DEO was the one who set it up in order to catch them. But no, no, no. It's the Children of Liberty. The DEO find out about them after the setup goes down, which was how they get saved, basically, as they're tied up. It's great to see the DEO do their job. It's great to see Director Danvers in play. They go up there, they basically, and this is the major force of this plot line as it goes down, because now we have the Children of Liberty back in play, something we've kind of missed them for a couple of episodes. They've been gone. We also get the DEO under this new Director Danvers, as we're going to get into when we discuss Alex and her mind wipe. We get that in play. And we also get this Supergirl action where Supergirl, Alex, and the Children of Liberty are all now intertwining and mixing. And of course, you know, another piece of social commentary that gets to play is Bobby taking the pill. And I'll tell you why, because it's not just Bobby takes the pill to go get revenge. Bobby, as it turns out, the sister, the little sister, who's for all means and purposes a good person. She's in college. She's studying. She doesn't actually like what her brother and his friend are doing. She's not partaking in it. She is an unwilling participant. We learn that the parents are gone, the mom died, and now they live in this RV, and the only family she has is Jerry. And this is when I started off talking about sisters. Here's this first sister, brother-sister relationship. Thankfully, we find that out. And Bobby's been bullied. Bobby's been bullied, and now she's tired of it. She's sick of it, and she takes one of the pills and goes after the Children of Liberty, because she wants them to have payback for what they did to her brother and his friend, and just knows what they're doing is wrong. She wants the strength that she sees the other monsters displayed. That bullying aspect, we don't realize who's bullied. We just assume everyone's good, everyone's fine. A lot of people bottle their feelings up inside. That's a real thing that we have to discuss, and we need to remember as people that feelings and emotions are just as real as things that happen. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can break your heart. And we need to remember that and remind ourselves of that aspect, because we see Bobby going into play and stepping up and trying to fight the Children of Liberty, but fighting fire with fire is usually not a good idea. It just causes more fire, as we see in the after effect of what happens when Bobby goes there and the Children of Liberty are already attacking the townspeople and the aliens, and Bobby's attacking them, and you can't discern who's the bad guy versus who's the bad guy when everyone's acting like a bad guy, right? So here we got one bad guy. We have the good guy who turns into a bad guy, and then we have everyone just acting like a bad guy. That's what the problem with fighting fire with fire and eye for an eye is. Everyone ends up blind, and it's just wonderful how this plays out in the storyline. Very, very good. And of course, Brainy getting all those wins where he's victorious. He gets the frat boys to disclose the information. He locates the RV with the little bit of information that they have. And finally, he locates Agent Danvers when John is looking for her, and he's just had so many little victories. So kudos to Brainy. Thank you so much. Let's get into what I felt was the most pertinent of the storyline. Because, yeah, the major plot was the RV and the drug dealers, but the subplots played such a huge, important role in this week's episode. As I stated in the beginning of the episode, I was very impressed with this episode. It was such a good episode. Very strong was my overall thought. And this is why. This Nia Nall's trip home played such a strong part. Nia Nall, played by Jessica Maines, as we all know, is a trans actor. And she is fantastic. I mean, look, I'm not saying that because it's politically correct to say, oh, I'm supporting the trans actor. No, that's not what I'm doing. I'm supporting all the actors that are on this show because I actually enjoy the show of Supergirl. But Jessica Maines does an amazing job. She's amazing as an actor. She portrays Nia Nall, and to the point where the trans aspect isn't even something that we discuss as much as her character coming to life as someone we're all endeared towards, someone we all like and enjoy, whose good nature is so just endearing, and whose conflict, her inner turmoil, is something that we can all relate to, no matter what your background is. So Nia Nall's trip home actually starts at this game night that everyone's having, and Nia Nall is there, partnered, and we see these partners break up: James and Lena, Nia Nall and Brainy, and of course Alex and Carr. And Nia Nall's they're playing these games, exploding kittens and things like that, which I had no idea what exploding kittens was. I had to look it up. It looks fun. And we see that Nia Nall gives the information, and this is why it's important, these tidbits of information, that she's from Parthis. Parthis meaning paradise in Irish. And humans and aliens have lived there and coexisted for decades. So it's this exclusive community. That automatically, in a way, perks Kara's interest in Parthis. I mean, I was interested in seeing Parthis. This is a beautiful idea of people just living together. It's a very harmonious place. And Nia feels that even being there helped in her trans identity, because people were so accepting because it's such an inclusive place. And she discusses that and shares that with Kara on the drive up. Kara, of course, volunteers to go with Nia because Nia has her dreamer narcolepsy, which makes her fall asleep and has these dreamers. And the dreamer, the hero, the dreamer that we're going to get introduced to, is Nia's power as it's passed along down the female line of her family. And it's something that's very strong to her race. Nia's half alien, half human. She's mixed. And as a person who's mixed, I appreciate how they're blending these cultures. What they're not actually discussing is, it's not like Nia's mom is alien looking. And that's a thing where we have to get into the ideas of passing and privilege, because this show is full of social commentary. So it would be remiss of me not to discuss these things. However, Nia's identity as trans is the one that causes more of the persona of being mixed more so than her genetic heritage. So as a person who's mixed, and that just means that I have one parent who's Persian, one parent who's Black, and that's considered mixed because they're different quote-unquote races, even though we do know race is such a made-up sociological identity that we've created on our own. We love to look at this and think of, well, these people are mixed and this is what happens. And it was relatively easy for her. It was so easy for her to talk about herself being trans. What isn't easy for her, and this is what's so interesting, is she's in the closet about her dreamer power. That's the that's the one that's like causing her all the angst and the anxiety. How do I tell my family that I'm the dreamer in the family? And we don't understand why, for the most part, because if any of us had superpowers, man, I would tell the whole world. That's why I could never be Superman. Do you understand? If I was Superman, I would be in the NFL, the NBA. I'd be flying. Oh, you need, hey, what's up, girl? Oh, you need a ride to work? Oh, he is a Ferrari? I can fly. Get on. Like, I would just use it and everyone would know. Everyone would know. That's why. So Dreamer, her reluctance to talk about it is actually something a lot of us don't understand. What is her reluctance? Where does that come from? And we're going to discuss that when we talk about Nia and her sister, the other sisterly relationship, which we are going to have a big talk about that because it was a very strong point in the show. So Nia's trips home wasn't all perfect. She gets there. It's the Harvest Fest. Let's see what goes wrong. Harvest Fest gets destroyed by the Children of Liberty. Harvest Fest turned into a memorial. Do you want to know why? Because her mom died. Nia's mom died on this trip home. She has this moment. Of course, she gets into a fight with her sister. So much went wrong during this thing. And Carr is there to watch it all, which actually it's so good that Carr ended up being there because that meant Supergirl was there to help save the day. Or did she? Ooh, we have to find out. So we learn a lot about Nia as a person. We learn about her family with her dad and her mom being this botanist and her sister being her mom's protege and prodigy, this super botanist who's learned everything and 30,000 types of radishes and all the stuff that she's learning. And she's fluent in Dreamer because she's waiting for the power. This is where we're looking. We're thinking that the mom passes down and she's in her mind, my daughter. And then, of course, her gender is sex is scientific, but gender is made up. So she's thinking, my daughter is going to be Maeve. It's going to be Maeve. Maeve, the daughter, the older sister. And, of course, it's Nia is the daughter that she passes the powers to, which is an interesting aspect of it, right? With the Dreamer power. But we have the Children of Liberty come up to protest, and that's a big thing. They're trying to destroy the Harvest Festival. And something that's very, very profound that was said: when you have something good, there will always be people who want to tear it down. Boom. More genius, brilliant social commentary. When you have something good, there will always be people who want to tear it down. And that's something that's so true in the world that we come from. And we end the Parthas trip with Nia's father giving her a gift from her mother, something he saw in his dream because the mother came to the father in the dream. We also saw this power of revelation from Nia's mom when she goes to Nia in her dream, which is why we're going to speak on the dreamer. Now, the dreamer aspect of Nia is on the dream home, on the ride home with Kara. The reason why Kara is driving in the first place, Nia goes into that narcoleptic shock she does and falls asleep and has a dream. And in this dream, she sees an old woman who we later find out to be her mom with the white hair, take a sip of an inky blank black substance from a crystal cup, which we later see is Maeve's ink from the Japanese ink wash that she's taking up because she's just the overachiever. And then we see something happen to the mom and she turns into a crow, which is dreamer talk for death. The crow, as we've discerned from things like, I don't know, the movie The Crow, it's a sign. There's a whole mythology of how the crow takes the soul and crosses it into, or and the raven, similar birds that cross the soul into the netherworld, into the other world. So that's what the crow stands for. But Nia's not as studied in the art of dreams, so she doesn't understand what the dream meant. And she's not, when Kara asked her, did you have another dream? She doesn't admit it. And her reluctance is actually something that's very surprising. Because in other ways, Nia seems very open. Here she is open about being trans. Here she is open about her ideas. She stood up for her ideas before in moments of panic and moments of bravery. I've seen her just be the strong person. And she's even used her dream powers before when we saw her stand up to Agent Liberty himself. So why is there such a disconnect in her power? Why doesn't she just accept it? She's so accepting of who she is in every other aspect. Why is this such a boundary for her to accept? We also see another instance of her power when her mother and her have a conversation, because we find out, of course, Maeve, and we're going to discuss Nia and her sister because that's its own topic. But Maeve basically is the one who wants to be the dreamer. She wants the power, and that's what her reluctance is. But when mom is bitten by the spider and dies, mom comes to Nia in her dream, and mom is just like, of course, it's you. Before that, they even had a conversation because Nia's willing, like, she wants to transfer the power to her sister. She wants to give it away. And mom's like, no, it's destined. You can't transfer it. It's just something you have. But Nia never admits even to her mom that she has it. It's only in after death, when the mom comes in a dream, Nia's mom knows that she has power. And Nia explains, like, basically she doesn't want this. And it's like, I knew it was you. It should have been you. I just knew. I saw it was one of my daughters, but I never saw her face. And it's you. So the mom knows, of course, it had to be her, right? And that her armament was water, and that Nia's is fire. And so that'll make her even stronger than the mom. That'll even make her more powerful. Her powers are more profound and prolific and just exponentially more powerful in nature because of that fire and that fire in her. Nia also has a dream sitting with her sister, and a bunch of spiders spill out, and the spiders cause a bunch of crows. I don't think we got that. I thought it might have meant the Harvest Festival, but it may have meant something else, as they're all wearing white. I don't know. It's in that memorial. I would love to know what the chat thinks about that, what they think about the bunch of spiders. Is it something that's going to come to play? Is it something that comes out later? Maeve, of course, throws in, as the overachiever she is, that she's fluent in dream interpretation and would have been able to interpret the dream and save the mom, right? And Maeve is just so upset about Nia being the dreamer. It's something that she's basically done everything to follow in her mother's footsteps, and this would have been the next step. And Maeve comes out and discuss. And now let's get into Nia and her sister Maeve. Now this was a heavy part of this episode, especially anyone who has a sibling or anyone who's in the situation of telling someone a truth and them throwing it in their face. That was very deep. We find out there's a very passive-aggressive competition because Maeve is such an overachiever. And even though she's so supportive of her sister and thinks her sister is brave, she's the one that stayed home. She's the good girl. She's done everything her parents asked. She's the prodigy, the protege, the one who's following in her mom's footsteps. And everything seems to be written for her in that regard. She's waiting to be the dreamer. Here's the competition that comes out, because it's a passive-aggressive love they have, especially Maeve has towards her sister. She says good things and then says negative things, and she plays this big sister role almost to a fault. It's a very subconscious, subtle form of bullying that Maeve has been projecting onto Nia. And obviously, it makes me wonder if, sure, we find out that Nia has always wanted to be a journalist and change the world, but maybe she ran away from all of this situation. She felt inclusivity in the town, in the community, and with her family, but never really at home, and maybe never with her sister. Maybe never with her sister. And of course, when Maeve finds out at the Harvest Festival, when Nia saves her life because she has the forethought that someone's going to attack her sister who's giving the memorial speech with an axe, Nia jumps in and saves her sister. Maeve automatically recognizes you're the dreamer. You knew you were the dreamer. You've known, and we find out she's, you know, Nia's known for months, and Maeve finds that out as well. And oh my gosh, it causes that. Now the real competition comes out. Now the real Maeve, the real Maeve please stand up? And this is where it becomes a little bit dangerous, because Maeve basically throws it in Nia's face, and it's like, you're not even a real girl. Sheesh. Maeve is so upset that she's like, it's supposed to, the dreamer power is supposed to be passed down from mother to daughter, and that you're not even a real woman. She says that. And I'm wondering, in this moment of weakness, did she mean it, or was she being mean? Because in my head, she was doing both. It was really kind of how she felt, and she was being mean and lashing out, and that was an evil. And I'm not saying Maeve is a bad person, but that was evil. That was a horrible thing to say, and even more importantly than just saying horrible things, it was a horrible thing to think. To have your sister feel like she was accepted for one thing, and then throw at her her biggest insecurity that you played a huge part of her feeling secure about, that was huge. That was just such a defining moment of Nia and her sister and everything to play. I mean, it was just so strong. And of course, it leads to a part of the big reveal that we're going to find out at the end. Now, let's switch gears and talk about other sisters. Let's talk about Alex's mind wipe, and at the same time, Alex and Kara versus Alex and Supergirl, because she's acting very different towards both. Alex has a feeling something's wrong. She's feeling the mode. She's definitely in there understanding something has happened to her, and she knows it's not. She feels disconnected and vulnerable, so much so that she needs John to come in and do like a mind meld to see what's wrong. Do a mind wipe. I need something. Like, search it. Let me know. Even in the game night, Kara and Alex are usually, they're on the same page. They're always saying the same things, finishing each other's sentences, to the point where everyone else is afraid to have them on the same team. And then Kara can't even tell Alex can't even tell what Kara's favorite movie is. She's guessing all these wrong. Terminator, no, it's your favorite movie. Terminator 2 is your favorite movie. It's actually Wizard of Oz, because Kara feels she relates to that as an alien and being taken to this new place. And of course, Alex doesn't know that. She's been wiped. Her mind was wiped by John Jones in the previous episode. So we get a situation where Alex is just, that mind wipe really left. It's a lot of her. It was a huge chunk. It's a huge chunk. And that question from last week of how are they even able to do such a thing, let alone do such a thing on a whim quickly. And more importantly, she can't even, now she's not even, she's not only is she not acting the same towards Kara, she's not acting the same in general. Even her duties at the DEO, she's being very derelict in her duties. She's not as apt and capable and competent as she is. She's used to. She can't even crack the frat boys. She's like, I can't even crack these frat boys. I'm a trained DEO agent. I am the director of the DEO, you know? And she can't even do that. So I didn't understand why they couldn't just give her her memories back now that she's been through the truth seeker. She's been tried, she's been cleared, everything's fine. But I guess they try to explain it with a couple lines of dialogue where they're like, well, you know, Colonel Haley's still out to find out about who's Supergirl's real identity and things like that. So of course John talks Brainy and does the placebo, which is a lie, and tells Alex that she's fine, and then she kind of acts better, tells her it's everything due to stress, and she does start acting better. I must admit, I don't agree with the lie. I don't know what I would do in that situation, but I'm never a fan of lying to justify something. I guess it's just never my first call, but in this situation it does seem to help. But what it doesn't seem to help is Alex and Kara. So on one hand, we get Alex and Kara, and Alex and Kara are still sisters and good friends. Alex, of course, not telling Kara about all the stuff she has to do, but she doesn't know that Kara is Supergirl. So while she's she loves her sister Kara, she actually has conflict with her sister, unbeknownst to her, Supergirl. Because to her, Supergirl is getting in the way. Now we see that Director Danvers is acting a lot more like Colonel Haley. And Director Danvers is this Colonel Haley of the situation, and she's being very strict and conservative and sticking to the rules and a stickler for the rules and going against Supergirl. Even when Supergirl has to shoot her with her eye beams, she's like, well, you don't know the situation. You just attacked an agent of the DEO. And I thought she was, I really thought that Alex was going to arrest Supergirl. So we see that conflict, and she basically says to her sister, who she doesn't know is her sister, she says that you don't know what it's like to be vulnerable. Alex tells Supergirl, as the Girl of Steel, she doesn't know what it's like to be vulnerable because she's the Girl of Steel inside and out, right? And that's the thing. That's a big play on the concept of she doesn't know Supergirl at all. She doesn't know who Supergirl is, and Alex isn't aware at all. I mean, I thought that maybe subconsciously she would kind of know, but she doesn't. She doesn't know. Power of taking off your glasses. Up, oh, Tehran's here. Tehran's not here. Tehran's here. Tehran's not here. It's craziness, right? But I felt like there would be something because of the episode's name, Blood Memory. But the blood memory, as John points out, has been erased, has been taken out of her. She doesn't have that same component to her. And it takes away from her fight. This is a different Alex. We're looking at a different Alex. I'm hoping they replace her memories soon because, man, this is a... It's kind of a shame and it's kind of sad and it's breaking my heart. This, these sisterly bonds that we keep seeing breaking apart in this one specific episode. Now, time for the big reveal. And like I said, it's not just one, it's two. First, we get the big reveal where Supergirl finally tells Nia and shows Nia who she really is. Not that we didn't have enough people that needed to be mind wiped because they knew who Kara was, but she tells Supergirl tells Nia because... Nia, of course, being the second person to accuse that Kara doesn't know what she's going through. And Kara's like, look, I'm tired of it. You know what I'm going through. I do know what you're going through. I'm Supergirl. I've been hiding it from you. You can be a hero, and gives her the speech. And I know what your sister is going through. Trust me, I'm going through the same thing with my sister, X, Y, and Z. Inspiring Nia to what we're going to find out in our special news and gossip section, where we find out a little more about Nia and all. The second big reveal is that Red Daughter, there is a phone call. It ends with Red Daughter. Whoa, we're back in Cosnia. And the phone call by the Colonel to someone in America, who could he be calling? Maybe we'll get it by the end of the season. I don't know. The way this Red Daughter storyline's dragging out, we might not. It might not be till the seventh season that we get some of these answers. But I'm thinking it's going to come up sooner than later. Let's get right into the special segment and the news and gossip. News and gossip. Let's get that on the board if we can. AfterBuzz TV News. The first piece of news that we get is that we get our first trans superhero on television. Roll that beautiful bean footage. Ah, look at Nia. And we get the costume. Cannot wait. It seems that that's going to happen next week. We get the first trans superhero on television. And yes, it's a big deal. But honestly, it's really not, because that's what makes it more accepting, is when we just accept it for what it is. So I'm just glad we're finally getting the Dreamer. And that's amazing. The second piece of news and gossip, of course, that Supergirl has casted the DC villain Menagerie, and Menagerie is going to be played, and of course, Menagerie being Pamela Farrer, Menagerie is going to be played by none other than Jessica Mraz. Jessica Mraz is going to be the Menagerie's the DC villain, a member of the Elite, an assembly of anti-heroes led by Manchester Black. So we're going to get some of that back. So David Ajala is going to be back in play. And Menagerie is going to be this live action, basically incarnation of a jewel thief who doesn't mind hurting people. I'm looking forward to seeing this. We've seen it. We enjoy her. She was Cammy Page on Major Crimes. And now we get some Jessica Mraz here finally on CW Supergirl. She's fun. It's going to be a fun role, and it looks like it's going to be very cool. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. And looking forward to more Supergirl. For our special segment, each and every week we do scene reflection, where we pick a scene which reminds us of who we are and tells us about our inner psyche. My scene reflection is going to be going home with the sibling and mom talking about a sibling and you just feeling like you're there at that dinner. And the sibling my parents usually talk about is me to my other sibling. So I actually play the part, but not so mean at all as Maeve. I never throw out the truths and throw it back in my sibling's face. I mean, I was just disgusted by that, to be honest. But sitting at table and then, oh, and I'm this, and I'm the know-it-all. Yeah, I'm the know-it-all. What do you want, guys? What do you want from me? And when it comes to knowing it all, let's get right into predictions.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Ooh, and as we predict, listen, that end footage of next week's preview seemed amazing. Of course, I feel like we're going to get the Dreamer. It looked like we're getting some Agent Liberty back in play. And better yet, it looked like Agent Liberty's son is going to take over the mantle of her pick up where the father left off. That's the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. We're also going to get the concept of Lena and James. That's not over. That string has to come unraveled. We're going to find out because James could be in a lot of trouble, especially I don't think Mackenzie is going to just give up. She was adamant that her source knows more, and it looks like she might have something to prove. We'll find out all this and more next week on Supergirl as we get into episode 12. As for now, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun. We've all been here under the red sun together. Thank you so much for everyone who was in the chat. Leave a comment below. Love to hear from you. And if there are things that I left out, hey, we're more than just us. We'd love to hear from each and every one of you. So make sure to leave that comment below. My name's Tehran. You can find me at I Am Tehran, IAMTEHRAN. It's written on my hat. It's written on my shirt. And it's written all over everything that I own. So I Am Tehran. If you don't know how to spell Tehran, it's like the capital of Iran. You can just watch Fox News. I'm also a host of a slew of other AfterBuzz TV shows, especially CW and the comic book shows, everything from Supergirl to The Gifted. Please check me out, find me, and of course, rate and subscribe. We love it. Thank you so much. From this week until next week, up and away. I guess that's how we're going to just end it. Looking forward to having Zach, Heather, and Jorge back. See you guys next week.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.